Great. Thank you so much, Henri. That was a great presentation. We're now opening up to a Q&A discussion. I can see that many of you have been asking questions throughout the presentation, which is great. What we'll do, I've been collecting and grouping together some questions that are similar, and I'll ask our presenters those questions first up and then give them time to answer questions that maybe I missed or that they thought were particularly interesting. So please continue to type questions, and we'll see if we can get to some of them. We have about 25 minutes or so still left. It also looks like Benny dropped off, and we are working to try and get him back online. So for the first question that I'll ask Henri Noël and Valentina, and I wish that that Benny was still on for this, but I think I'll first start off with a question around protection. So what protection and conflict-sensitive design considerations would you recommend are really crucial for program design? You both touched upon the importance of protection in your program design and the impact of conflict on livelihood activities. So can you discuss maybe some key considerations or requirements that you would really recommend anyone operating in this environment to ask themselves or to integrate into their programs? And as part of that, how do you balance livelihood versus protection considerations in your program? We heard from Henri that Plan International really focused very heavily on protection considerations. And how is that balanced with the livelihood considerations? So Henri Noël and Valentina, over to you to answer that question. And hopefully we'll get Benny on soon.
Okay, maybe I can start. It's true. What we do is we do a lot of community involvement because we know that those that are very involved in the core problems of insecurity are hidden within the community. So one key thing that you have to do is to discuss with the community on the program you want to carry out, discuss with the community on whether this will be relevant to them and how it will have an impact on the progress or the growth of the economy. So once this discussion is done, it's already a key step to reduce your risk of insecurity. And it's a key step to push the community to protect what they want to build together. So this is one important aspect. The second thing I would say is that the children that were, our kids that were involved in the armed groups or rebel groups, we needed to simply discuss with the actors that have a specialization in demobilizing them, that is, removing them from the armed groups. These actors go and interact with the armed group leaders, negotiate with them to release those that are children because they are exposed to different sanctions by the law if they continue with those children. And so the group leaders will easily free these children. And then now we come in it with the reintegration component. That's how we come in now and take these children and help them. So it's a complementary effort that we do together. So that also contributes to help make it succeed when many actors contribute in different ways. The third and last point maybe I will make about this is that when the children start doing the training and then we start discussing with the families and they are happy to take back the children, it influences so much in the community and they see the positive realities and they see these children becoming more useful. And I think it plays so much on the reaction of the community and the environment to this program. Thank you.
We're back on.
Well, yeah, I'm back on.
Oh, great. Henri, we're now at Q&A, and Henri was just answering the question of what protection and conflict sensitivity design considerations would you recommend people who are attending this webinar include in their program design? And kind of a discussion of how you balance livelihood considerations to protection ones. So Valentina and Benny, do you have any
Yes, I would say, this is Benny talking. I would say that what the so protection should be a primary concern throughout all of livelihood activities. A primary concern of do no harm for beneficiaries, and that a good conflict analysis should be at the basis of that. And I can give you an example. We had previously run in our social cohesion project a lot of the work through a Muslim-Christian lens, because that's the way a lot, you know, 2 years ago when the project had been designed is the way it was understood. And we recently just did another evaluation out in the West in terms of the conflict, and we realized, you know, if you really dig in deep in terms of conflict out here, it's not Muslim-Christian. It's intercommunal. It has questions to do of economic interests. So you need to be, when designing a program, to really go in deep in terms of conflict assessment. So you have a conflict-sensitive design. I would also say in terms of GBV, you're looking at different needs in terms of different communities. So looking at the different kinds of evaluations. If it's protection is a very large, large domain. So if it is a question of domestic violence and what kind of concerns can increasing the amount of financial control women have in the household, will that improve their protection incidence? So we need to make sure that sort of those referral mechanisms within the programs don't label and stigmatize, and that the that their economic need is does not outweigh the visibility and protection concerns within the program design.
Great, thank you. Valentina, do you have anything to add to that? Okay, I think the next question has to do with how you all determined market viability in your programs for the income generating activities that you focused on. I'm assuming that you each did a market assessment, but how did that kind of take form? Did you look at a cost benefit analysis of the inputs that could be expected to be made versus the profits that that beneficiaries could expect to earn? Did you look at some other type of market saturation or other types of market demand in determining which type of livelihood options you would be pursuing? And so part of that, Benny, I know that you talked about many of the beneficiaries had previous livelihoods that they were returning to. Did you do any work to make sure that those would still be profitable in this new new context? And so for all of you, are there any changes that you would make to the way that you approached assessing market demand for the
So Benny here, I can say, and I think it was Dorothy who brought up this question earlier about the amount of demand for carpentry, especially for someone who's been trained for a short period of time. We're also looking at a context here because of the context in which Mercy Corps works, where household and shelter have been completely destroyed by conflict. So you do have a large need for carpenters and for locally made bricks. So of course, we always do a market evaluation assessment. I was in a town called Bacala. It's about 60 kilometers to the north of Bambari last week. And we're speaking with beneficiaries, and they said one of the largest needs they have is in terms of housing. So there's ways that you can actually work your income generating activity programming to be able to also to dovetail to the needs of the beneficiaries in other sectors, be that carpeting, be that brick making, or, you know, mechanics for transporters within the area.
Valentina, can you
hear us?
Great. Okay, if you wanted to answer the question about protection, because we lost you on that one, and then also the market demand question, I'll send that to you.
Okay, and I just wanted to focus on Oxfam approach because we are used to do protection risk analysis. Sorry, but we listen to music and I cannot speak. Yeah, thank you.
I think someone needs to mute themselves. Yeah, it's the person who's listening.
Okay,
to
it's okay.
Muted.
Sorry.
All right.
Okay. I just wanted to speak about Oxfam community protection approach. Normally, we do many different risk protection analysis to avoid the do not harm and to identify specific vulnerabilities and to identify specific groups as Benny said about GBV victims and to identify their needs and to help them to develop their local their own activities and their own AGI.
Thank you, Valentina. Henri, do you have any response to the question about market demand and how you determined which vocations would be profitable?
Well, in our practice, here in CARE, there is a service called ACFPE. It is a specialized service created by the government to gather all information concerning employment opportunities and different openings for the market. So we use the same technical expertise and we send them to the field to go and do the assessment and recommend to us fields which are profitable for the children or for the youth that are without jobs. And these are the opportunities that we now exploit and support in conducting the trainings for them to go on with. So there are many opportunities that come up, but the study sometimes needs to be done in the specific area because it varies from one part of the country to the other, depending on what the community has as key demand. And it is based on that we did the trainings we did for this project. Thank you.
Great, thank you. We've had a couple of questions about training. In all of your programs, training really ranges quite substantially. So I believe in Mercy Corps, it's a 3-day intensive training, where PLAN had a 6-month vocational training. And Valentina had several different training situations. So my question to you three are, how did you decide what content would be necessary for the trainings? How did you evaluate the training effectiveness, and what changes would you make to your training curriculum, or the duration, or the methodology used to impart the information? What changes would you make if
Hi, Benny. The Teach of Plan International. Okay, go ahead, Benny.
Oh, Henri, go ahead, please.
Okay, I was saying that for the Kids of Plan International, the training center which we are working with had to work closely with the Ministry of Education. There is a department for vocational training. So they worked closely together and validated the modules. And that's why the training certificates are signed by the government services and the training center. They are not signed by Plan International. We are simply providing support for this training to be conducted. So the training center is eligible by the government and the training package is validated by the government as well. So that's what we are going with. But what we are ensuring anyway is that there are components of child protection that are integrated into the package which are now more specific to our mission, our agenda. And there are also aspects of psychosocial support which are added to the package to accompany the children because they have special cases. These are the extra packages or aspects that we add to the program. And of course, we do a lot of monitoring to make sure the children don't go out of track. So that's essentially what I can say here. Thank you.
Hi, yeah, so for our on Mercy Corps case, it's not just training for 3 days. We'll actually run trainings. Sometimes they'll be 1 day, sometimes they'll go up to 6 months as well. It depends on the program, the donor, the beneficiary needs, subject chosen, on multiple factors. So currently this week, actually starting today, we started, it is a retraining of VSLAs with which we previously worked in Bambari. So that will be a 2-day intensive training on group governance, on accounting tactics, and so on and so forth. And at the end of that training, they'll be given VSLA kits with notebooks, black and red pens, black boxes, calculators. But for longer term aspects, if you're looking at something like a petit métier, like a small, like something like welding, like carpentry, those will be longer, more intensive trainings that will go from 3 to 6 months. Ideally, if you're looking in a perfect world, you're going to be able to do longer term trainings and also have time at the end of your training to be full on support and follow up with those beneficiaries. We plan that into our programming, given the funding cycles in an emergency environment where you're often looking at 1 year. Sometimes that's not always possible to have a longer term job training program that will last longer than 6 months. 6 months is really the limit that we're able to do within the funding environment.
Thanks so much, Valentina. Do you have anything to add?
According to the training, we would like to focus that, for example, with the agricultural groups, we are doing technical support. It's capacity building because we found, of course, people we already know how to do. Just helping them to develop their capacities and to improve their knowledge. And also because we support agricultural groups in financial management and management technique and marketing.
Great. All right. So I think we have about 8 minutes left, and I'll use the next 5 minutes or so for Valentina, Henri, and Benny to answer any questions that they have seen that weren't that didn't ultimately make it to this space. We obviously got a ton of questions in the chat box, or to touch upon any closing thoughts or areas of interest or issues that this presentation brought up for them. So take it away, Benny, Henri, and Valentina.
Hi, Benny here. I guess I'll go ahead and start. One of the questions I see here are the content of IGA kits and the grant size. So in our, again, that will depend from program to program. We tend not to do IGA kits because we don't find them to be as effective for beneficiaries. So we normally do cash grants and then follow up through our M&E department to check on their purchases. In our Recover 2 program, which was from September 2015 to October 2016, it was about $85. In our current OFDA project, it's up to about $120. We recently ran an evaluation in the same zone for an upcoming OFDA project that would start this fall, and that has gone up to about $160 in terms of being able to have a profitable and sustainable IGA. But with regard to the makeup of the IGA kit, there's not a really standard set amount. And there were a lot of questions about cell phone and cell phone penetration. We aren't able to do a lot of mobile tech for several reasons. One is the amount of cell phone coverage in the country, which can be fairly variable. You'll get 3G networks in the capital in Bangui, and in some places outside, but really once you drop outside of there, it's not much. You're also looking at questions in terms of literacy, both on the phone, which aren't insuperable, but still present challenges, as well as the cost of mobile phones for beneficiaries. And even if you look at things like mobile cash transfers, there's not the same number of agents that you have, even in places like the Eastern DRC, where Mercy Corps has a fairly large cash transfer program. So it's something that we're certainly looking at and would like to work on more. But the current cell phone penetration, usage rates, literacy rates, and cash transferability of the telecom providers in the country right now really don't allow us to rely much on mobile tech in the country. I'll pass off onto the next presenters. And thank you again, USAID, and Anthony and Valentina, for all of your support and help.
Yes, I saw. Yes, I can.
Thanks, Benny.
I saw one question about whether other donors funded this kind of project. It's just to clarify that we are doing a lot of programs that target children associated with armed groups or who are unaccompanied and separated. So these children, we have funding from several donors, but the one I was presenting here was particularly the one funded by OFDA in the Lobai prefecture, but many others have been funded in Bangui and other parts of the country because it's one of our key activities. There was also another question about the involvement of families. As I said during the presentation, we identify some families and they are selected generally by the community leaders and the children. They are the ones who tell us they are comfortable with this particular family or this particular one, because they have no history of child abuse. And so we now train these families on how to work and interact with specific children like this and accompany them when they are doing this training. And another question was around the sustainability. As I also mentioned earlier during the presentation, once the training is over, we accompany them for a few months to ensure that they really settle. And if they need any guidance or any support, again, we try to provide that support. I think that's what I can say, and I'll hand over to Valentina for other input. Thank you.
Thank you, Ali. I just wanted to come back to the market analysis, because we didn't answer. And it's our approach with the protection risk analysis to identify the most effective way of intervention on the field. And it's also related to the evaluation of the effectiveness, actually because our monitoring on the field is done very, very often, and is done in collaboration with local partners and local authorities. Another question, it's Oxfam approach is always doing external evaluation for each of its projects, and it's for our project in PAWA is foreseen at the end of the month of June. I wanted to really to focus your attention on the participation of local communities in decision of different activities and on reorientation eventually for problems, for difficulties that we can find on the field. And also the most important thing is the participation of, as I said, local authorities and a local partnership to create an ownership of a project and of activities.
Great. Thanks so much, Valentina. I'm going to pass it over to April to conclude the presentation, but I want to thank each of our presenters so much for the work that they do in CAR. It is crucial work, and also for the participants of this webinar for dialing in. April, over to you.
Great. Thank you so much to our presenters again. This was really a rich conversation and just impressive to hear what you all have been able to accomplish in such a challenging environment. Thanks to all of you for sticking with us. We had our own challenging environment here this morning in DC. We've got some polls here if you could take a moment to answer before you leave the webinar here, and stay tuned. We will have some resources available to you. There's actually a couple here in the upper left-hand corner that you can download that provide a little bit more context, but we will provide a recording, a transcript, and hopefully a post-event resource that will answer some of these questions we didn't have time to address today. Thanks again, and look forward to seeing you next time.